Rewind, your week in review, is sponsored by the Transportation Development Association of Wisconsin, sharing one goal: enhancing the quality of life in Wisconsin through the development and maintenance of a strong transportation network. The Transportation Development Association of Wisconsin. It's how we get there.
Because I don't want to go backwards. I want to keep going forward together. That's exactly where we're going to go. God bless.
I'm Steve Walders.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
This is Rewind, Wisconsinized look at this week in the Capitol. J.R., joint finance began a couple weeks ago, but they're starting to hone in on some major decisions.
Yes.
The first major decision they make, let's lead with that. They decided, no surprise, but officially, they're killed the governor's self-insurance plan.
Yes.
Now, that wasn't a surprise, but what did you learn about it this week?
Well, they kind of confirmed what we've been hearing, that they got to find a way to make up the savings elsewhere.
Yeah.
So the way the governor put this plan together, he expects $60 million in savings from moving to a self-insurance plan. But he took that savings and tied it up into very popular pots of money, one for K-12 education, one for state employee raises, another for UW employee raises. So without that savings, let's be honest, members of the legislature kind of doubt that money's going to materialize. They had to find a way to make up that saving, at least on paper, in the budget. So what do you do? Well, they could look at increasing copays, deductibles, these other costs, pull these levers in the insurance program we have right now to try and lower the state's costs, which also means more costs for state employees, that then might generate that savings. So that's one option they can look at. So this is not a surprise, but the governor's administration pushed back very hard on this week.
They did.
Saying
both Neitzel and the governor came out.
That this is not a mirage. $60 million is real. They said, we have contracts. So this process works. They sign the contracts, they send a joint finance, which has in a, they call it passive review. They look at it, have to have somebody object to it for not to go into effect, otherwise it does. They're expecting an objection, they have to have a vote, they're expecting a vote and shoot it down. But the administration is saying, look, these are real contracts, these are real numbers that we're putting for you guys, what's the holdup? That Alberta Darling, one of the co-chairs, is saying, there's just too much risk right now. Well, what's going on the Affordable Care Act, the insurance market? I'm not sure this is a good idea. And oh, by the way, we did self-insurance several decades ago. It came in higher than we thought it was going to. So there's just too much uncertainty right now.
Yeah, that's true. That letter from the Group Insurance Board said, yes, a consulting firm in 2012, a long time ago, said it could lose $100 million. But they said they've got that buckled down so it wouldn't lose $100 million. And they were pretty confident in the $60 million. The governor's tweet, wrong direction to dismiss $60 million worth of proven savings at a time when some are asking to spend more on transportation. Is that proven savings a reference to the 46 states that they say do self-insure?
Well, that plus the contracts. They're saying that this is not just a projection anymore. It's not just a consultant study.
Yeah.
It's a real deal with people to make this happen. So that's, I think, part of what he's talking about.
Okay, but I want to come back to where they're going to come up with the $60 million, because Speaker Voss, before last week's session, noted, and I wrote down the number from my notes from the Speaker's press conference, ETF has reserves of, if Mr. Voss is right, 88 million to 120 million. Is that a sign that they want to come up with some of the $60 million from dial down the reserves? Because remember, this is a legislature that found $1 billion in the UW system and made them eat part of that.
Well, John Niagara and the other co-chair from finance hinted about this week and asked, where did that money come from? Is that reserve built up from state employees?
Yes.
That was one of the key questions he wanted to know. So he'll be asking more about this process goes along. But yeah, there are ways to free up money in this building if you try hard enough, and that might be one of them.
Well, but one final point. The governor did use the $66 million to boost K-12 aides, the difference between 188 per kid and 200. So that was a very real $12 per kid upper that may not be there as a result
of
this.
The members of the Finance Committee have said that number, the $649 million that Walker wants to invest in K-12, is a good number. It's one that they kind of like because it is popular. They're getting good feedback about it, so they're not going to tinker that too much in the end.
Yeah, and just a note on school aides, Fitzgerald, who we'll get to in a minute, said, look, when this budget is finally on the governor's desk, it's going to include pretty close to that additional $649 million for K-12.
Yep.
Okay, new subject. The Coinga Assembly Republican Road to a Flat Tax Plan, 10 days later, not even on life support, my friend?
The governor, the first day, was like, I'm going to respect Dale's effort and kind of like hang back. Then all of a sudden, like a day and a half,
wow,
he was doing interviews at a couple of outlets to kind of raise concerns. Then he came out, did a couple of stops early this week saying there's a problem. This is a, then he said a $430 million tax increase on consumers for gas tax and sales tax combination. We got a memo from his revenue secretary this week.
And the budget director.
Laying out, here are some scenarios in which it would impact people. Basically trying to paint a, this is not a good thing because it's going to hit some people and create winners and losers.
Yeah, and I want to talk about that letter from the budget director and the secretary of revenue for just a minute. I want to just make three quotes because they really trashed it on all fronts. Number one, the plan would add $262 million to the structural imbalance. Number one. Number two, could result in tax increases for many income tax filers, including middle-class taxpayers, and then property taxes. And we know how much Governor Scott Walker cares about property taxes. Property taxes would be $79 higher on a median-valued home compared with your budget proposal. So they came out guns blaring on this deal.
A couple of things. It also noted that, because what Kayinga's proposed doing is we have right now an excise tax on gasoline, which is stable. Or, you know, same rate no matter what the price of gas is. He wants to pare that down, add the state sales tax, and then pare back minimum markup. Well, the sales tax is a consistent number, but the price of gas goes up, it pulls in more money. If it goes down, though, it pulls in less. And what Chandler warned in that letter is, by going to a system where you have the gas tax or have the sales tax on gasoline sales, you raise the risk of having to adjust spending in the middle of the two-year period because of fluctuations with gas prices. So that was kind of an interesting note from them about that.
But there's two other. There are two other segments with this, and I want to talk about because at that same press conference, Speaker Voss said we may have to stop some of these construction projects because we're not going to go along with the governor's $500 million. We're not going to borrow for this. And then you had Senate Majority Leader Fitzgerald said, well, okay, let's put this in context. Voss said we're not going to borrow more from the transportation fund, and that's an important distinction. Then you had Senate Majority Leader Fitzgerald said, we just got Bob Lang's new revenue estimates. We're not looking at any major reductions, no major uppers, no major downers. So there's going to be enough money in the general fund, not the transportation fund, to issue more bonds to support highway construction. So, but here's my question. If Voss and Assembly Republicans don't like bonding from this pocket, transportation fund, are they about to like bonding from this pocket, the state's checkbook, the general fund?
Well, let's hit first, to wrap up that memo, Kayinga, when we talked to him about it, he said, look, what they don't mention in the memo is that when you look at the total package, you create way more winners than you have losers. I think he said 85% of people will see a tax decrease. So even though you have these smaller credits, like the marriage credit that would go away and would, you know, take this hit off of your, you know, your refund, that in the end, because of a flat tax, you're going to save money for most people, not everybody, but for most people. So there's that piece of that memo that Kayinga pointed out. But going back to what this transportation puzzle, the best guess that I've gotten from people this week has been that in the end, they will go toward what the Senate wants to do, which is free up money from this checking account, the general fund.
General fund checking
to pay account. For borrowing. That's only paid for by this checking
which
account.
Which we've done in the past. Over, I think, 14 years, $1.5 billion in general fund-supported bonding for highway projects.
But then pull in some pieces of the Kayinga plan to kind of help bridge the gap. Now, this new idea floated yesterday, which you kind of heard before, but it kind of gone away, of taking the transportation piece of the budget out, doing a separate bill. The governor said, no way. Fitzgerald said, I don't want to do that. So the co-chairs are saying they're open to it. There's a problem in the Senate Republican caucus saying, with the leader saying, I'm not going to do that. We've been through that road before, mid-90s sometime.
Yeah, I think it was at least 15 years ago. 15,
if we need Dem votes to pass a transportation budget, we're in trouble, wants nothing to do with it. But Voss pointed out the alternative. If we can't strike a deal, if these two sides of the Republican Party can't strike a deal, the alternative is current law, which means nothing gets fixed. And the overall piece of this whole puzzle is, if they go the route of taking money from general fund to pay for transportation borrowing, they don't solve the long-term problem. And the transportation advocates will tell you the problem is the gas tax is not a increasing source
of
revenue.
Not even index anymore.
It's going to be because cars get more fuel efficient,
yes.
All that stuff. It's not a stable source going forward. So we're talking about building fewer roads. So to address these needs, how do we find money? There's not a long-term fix.
Okay, but we got to stick with this because Fitzgerald said, look, we may want to issue bonding, which is borrowing from the paid for from the general fund checkbook, and we may then want to use that as a bridge to tolling. But tolling is a whole different set. We're 3 to 4 years away, Voss has said, from tolling. Mm-hmm. You got to get federal approval. Excuse me, I think the federal laws have to be changed. So were you surprised at the new emphasis from Senator Fitzgerald on tolling as a long-term solution?
No, it's kind of been out there for a while. That's an option. But beyond getting the federal law change, you have to build the infrastructure, put up the tolls, where are they going to go?
Yep.
How are you going to make that work for Wisconsin residents? Because imagine if you live in Kenosha right now and work in the northern suburbs of Chicago, you're going to hit by a toll on the north side of the Illinois state line and then 5 miles later on the south side of the Illinois state line or 10 miles later. How's that going to work? Are you going to be happy about that? So that's a big question to address.
And final thing on this, I was surprised to hear Fitzgerald said he's convinced that you have got to address finishing the Zoo Freeway, the north-south segment. I don't know that he'd said that with that much emphasis before. Am I wrong?
No. And the other thing to look at, Chris Capinha, a member of the state Senate, Republican, he's looking at part of our problem is we have all these big interstate projects that are all about the same age and all basically are hitting at the same time. So we did the Marquette interchange 10 years ago. Mm-hmm. The Zoo was pushed back a little bit to be doing it right now. Mm-hmm. There is 94 north-south, 94 east-west, all these projects in southeastern Wisconsin. He told me he wants to figure out how can we just do these projects and get them through this rebuild phase without putting a permanent tax or permanent revenue increase on residents. Now, if he can figure that out, kudos to him. But part of it is this money crunch with all these big projects that are roughly the same age, expiring all about right now.
But regional factors, all those projects that you just outlined are in southern or southeast Wisconsin. Where's the incentive for a northern legislator to say, oh yeah, let's widen I-39 between Madison, Yellen, and Lyon? Yeah. This is absolutely fascinating. Okay, time for a new subject. The Veterans Home triggered a move by Joint Finance. They want oversight over transfers. Now, I'm gonna read from the Legislative Audit Bureau. $55 million was transferred from King's institutional operations account to other accounts that do not directly benefit King. But that's over a 12-year period.
Mm-hmm.
And then we have some of the examples of questions about care in King. And you and I read that audit, and there you have this soiled carpet that allegedly didn't get repaired for 7 years, which drives the new Secretary of the Department of Veterans Affairs absolutely crazy, because he says it didn't work like that. So bottom line, legislators want oversight over transfers because $55 million is a lot of money. But here's my question, JR. An oversight provision in a budget bill, you and I have seen governors veto those out, so
it's called the line item veto. The most powerful veto pen in the country, even though they've reined it in twice in the last 20 years, whatever it's been. Still very powerful. Governor Walker vetoed a similar provision 2 years ago. So here's part of the backstory. We generate a quote-unquote surplus off of our veterans' homes in Wisconsin through the federal money coming in, all that stuff. They're the Veterans Trust Fund that pays for other programs benefiting veterans. They take the money, and that fund has had problems for years.
Yes.
They take the money from the homes, the surplus, and move it over to cover these other programs. To them, it's a good funding mechanism, the ones who have been advocating for it. Joint Finances wants to have, okay, before you transfer the money, let us know the passive review process.
What you're transferring, where it's going.
As long as we're okay with it, no problem. Member has a problem, we have a hearing, take a vote, that kind of thing. Governors don't like to give up authority to legislature. So will it survive? Don't know. But 2 years ago, so I kind of have a hard time seeing Governor Walker saying all of a sudden change of heart 2 years later about this issue.
Yeah, but you also reported on Secretary Zimmerman's email in which he said, and I'm quoting, headlines hyperventilate over the fact that over a lengthy period, $55 million was transferred from the home's account. What is key is that things are being handled effectively now. So he's very touchy on this. He's brand new secretary, and so he's saying things are in much better shape. But that's just interesting. Okay, other action on joint finance. They considered WEDIC, and let's talk about the loan issue. So fill us back in on that, because this provision would, go ahead.
So remember, 2 years ago, this loan program has all kinds of problems.
With, all kinds.
You know, forgivable loans, and is taxpayer money being tracked properly? So 2 years ago, they said, all right, we're going to phase
campaign,
it out.
Campaign contributors, their businesses kind of being given loans, excuse me.
So they capped it in this current budget and said after June 30th of 2017, no more.
There shall be no more.
Well, Governor Walker proposed bringing back the loan program, but only funding it with the revenue off of loans being repaid, okay? The Finance Committee's action basically said, okay, we're going to bring back the loan program, but take away that requirement of only the revenue from loans being repaid is how we fund these things. So that they can use other money for it.
Yep.
But there's still no more forgivable loans. A forgivable loan basically acts as a grant. I say, Steve, I'm going to give you this many dollars if you do A, B, and C. But by the way, if you do A, B, and C, you don't have to pay me back. You know, that kind of thing. So it's really more of a grant than a loan. Those would go away under the plan, but they're basically bringing it back. And one of the points that was made both during the finance hearing and in past months about this from Alberta Darling and the late Rick Gudex was that while we have problems or had problems with WEDIC and how these loans were administered at the state level, if you go into the communities where they're operating, the local economic development corporations, they're saying these are good things. We like them. Make them work. So this is an effort to make them work out in the community without the baggage that we saw from what is quite honestly a botched launch of WEDIC. I mean, even the governor's defenders will tell you that they rushed this thing from Commerce to WEDIC in, was it 6 months? They basically transferred from Commerce to WEDIC.
And they moved a bill taking the governor off the board because it was in such a hot seat.
So it was, the foundation was not good. They've been trying to clean up ever since then, but they hope at this point they have, and Alberta Darling during the hearing this week said, we are now confident in the leadership at that agency that things will be better going forward.
Right. Okay, and some other actions. They approved $1.4 million for high-tech Fab Labs, which was shop class when you and I were back in there. And they approved $7.1 million to build statewide 9/11 system that would also receive text, photos, and videos. But they asked for, I'm going to spend some time on this, they asked for more oversight over national legal settlements that our State Department of Justice shares in. Now, did they formally say we want to be consulted and have up or
passive
down?
Passive review process
passive
again.
Review.
So submit it to us. Now, this is discretionary settlements. A lot of times, let's say there's a consumer protection action, okay? They reach a deal. Sometimes the DOJ has said, okay, here's our deal. The money will be spent on A, B, and C.
Yep.
All right? No discretion there.
Those that were fleeced.
Sometimes we get money, okay, Attorney General, you get to do what you want with it. It goes in this special pot of money. Joint Finance wants, before this money in the special pot spent, to have it submitted to them saying, okay, what are you going to do with it? Where is it going to go? Again, if everything is okay with them, go ahead. If there's an objection, hearing, and then a vote. So that's what they want. They want to know more about where things are going.
Okay, but here's my question. I do not know the answer, so maybe we should call somebody at DOJ. Would this affect the $26 million for new buses for Milwaukee County? Do you know anything about that?
Good question.
Because they were going to use the VW emission scandal settlement to pay that. I didn't hear that discussed. Is that still an open question in your mind?
Whether they're going to do it, I don't know. I'm not sure how that would work because they're both in the same bill. So how would that work? I don't know. I don't think they'd get like review of that money if they keep it in the budget under this process.
Okay.
That's a guess.
And in the spirit of full disclosure, Wisconsin I turns 10 years old this month. You want to sing happy birthday?
No, not a good singer.
Joint Finance Committee, in the spirit of full disclosure, did approve $450,000 for Wisconsin Eye to buy new cameras throughout the Capitol because we signed on 10 years ago. Those cameras were installed more than 10 years ago. JR, you got any electronics in your house that are 10 years old?
I still have a VCR.
You never use it, but just the details on that. Joint Finance said the Assembly and Senate would pay over the next 2 years $412,600 for 21 cameras, and the Supreme Court would chip in $37,800 to cover the cost of two cameras for the Supreme Court. All this is contingent upon Wisconsin I raising. I want to be sure I get the number right. $226,200 as a match. And just put that out there, okay? Okay, new subject. This Scott, This scholarship plan, announced by Senator Nass, Representative Tyler, and State Treasurer Matt Adamczyk, I'm choosing to talk about this because it's $5,000. And I looked up the tuition on campuses, and this is, they say it's the largest scholarship in state history. Well, if you got one of these, tuition, resident tuition on the Madison campus is $9,273, and UW-Milwaukee, $8,091. The four-year colleges, $6,766, and at the two-year colleges, $4,750. This is a lot of money, $5,000 scholarships. But I don't get the political dynamics of this because they're targeting the stewardship fund.
Yes, which is, so a couple of things. The state already owns this property through the Board of Commissioner Public Lands.
Yes.
150-some years ago, the feds gave us a bunch of land. We sold it, created this endowment. They've been doing land sales back and forth, generating money for years to benefit schools and libraries, et cetera. They want to take some land BCPL currently owns, have the DNR purchase it, use the revenue to do this. Problem though, one, it would cut into the stewardship money available.
Yes.
To basically do land purchases, which the purpose of the stewardship program is to protect land that's in threat of danger being developed, that is used
for
recreation.
Nelson Knowles stewardship plan.
Land used for recreation, for hunting, preserve it for, you know, just to preserve the land, period. So their conservationists have an issue with that piece of it, raising, well, you're going to, I think it's like a third of the money in the fund or something like
it
that
is.
A year.
It is. $10 million of the $33 million annually for the stewardship fund would pay for these scholarships in the first 3 years. So you're exactly right. They're coming after, the legislature said, we're setting aside $33 million for stewardship fund to buy land that would be forever preserved, kept pristine, and these three Republicans are targeting $10 million of that.
And their stewardship fund, one of the overarching like concerns from Republicans has been, how much land should the state own? At some point, isn't there enough? Two, the long-term cost, because it's often paid for by bonding to cover the purchases. And are we getting a good deal for land that we buy? There are three different pieces of that, but I'm not sure Republicans are big fans of that program in general in terms of like, are we... Maybe we're doing enough. Maybe in their minds we're doing enough, and that'd be okay. That might be part of the dynamic, but I haven't got a good feel yet from everybody, enough input to know for sure, is that going to fly or not when it rubber hits the road.
Okay, but if you're a parent out there, and you're a parent of a high school junior, sophomore, maybe even senior, the potential of a $5,000 scholarship, which is based on GPA and your test scores, would probably get your attention.
It's a merit scholarship, and that's another concern that's been brought up, is it's not one based on financial need. So everybody would be eligible, which I'm sure, you know, somebody would like, but there are other folks saying, look, you know, do we need to make sure that wealthy kids from wealthier families the same shot as somebody from a poorer family? That's a question that might be addressed too.
Okay, new subject. Tomorrow you and I get to spend a day at the Republican State Convention.
The Chula Vista.
We'd be there tonight, except the governor's events are closed to the press. Otherwise, we'd be there. So, who's going to speak? Senator Johnson, the governor's son, Alex Walker, because he's ahead of Midwest
Regional Director of College Republicans.
Attorney General Schimmel, Congressman Duffy, Governor Walker, House Speaker Paul Ryan, Lieutenant Governor Rebecca Clayfish, and Congressman Glenn Grothman, Congressman Mike Gallagher will speak by video. How many times are we going to hear the two words President Trump tomorrow?
That's a good question. So conventions and off years are kind of like a celebration. For Republicans, this is going to be a celebration of 2016. They won the state for the first time since 1984. It's electoral votes. Ron Johnson's first Republican elected to a U.S. Senate seat in Wisconsin in a presidential year since 1980. They have five of the eight congressional seats, expand the majorities in the legislature. They're going to focus on that. I don't know how big of a factor President Trump is going to be, but they have an issue. One of them is his numbers are not very good right now. Yep. Of course, we're also in May of an off year. Who knows where we'll be in October of 2018. Right now, they're having some issues in D.C. with the Trump administration, with his poll numbers, the perceived drag on Republicans, the energy that the progressive base is talking about, but they also need to embrace the Trump voter, because those folks came out in places like Western Wisconsin and delivered in places that they had not delivered for a Republican before in presidential elections. So how do you walk that line?
Why is there no surrogate for President Trump speaking tomorrow? And I'm going to argue that Speaker Ryan, sure, he will, he's he's not endorsed, that's he's supported the president firing him, Mr. Comey. But why aren't we seeing a cabinet secretary? Because Wisconsin and voting for President Trump, helped him in the Electoral College. Why no Trump surrogate?
Good question. I haven't asked that yet, but you don't always see a cabinet member come speak or something like that at a convention. So who knows? I'm not sure about that.
If the president can go to Snap-on Tools in Kenosha, you might think he'd want to send a surrogate.
Of course, I'm not sure how often they're going to state conventions, period, this year. I don't know if they've gone to Colorado and Nevada and everywhere else and sending people out. Last year, we got Tom Perez, Labor Secretary for then President Obama, who came to Wisconsin to give a kind of a rally cry at the convention that they had for Democrats.
But right. Do you think we'll ever hear these two words, Jim Comey, tomorrow at the convention?
Good question. I'm interested to watch to see how that dynamic plays out and if there's an embrace, a full-throated embrace of the president, or if it's more about the successes here and looking ahead to 2018 when Governor Walker, by the way, is dropping all kinds of hints that he's going to run for re-election next year.
Well, he just named a campaign chairman.
Yeah.
That's a
Joe Thadness.
Pretty good sign.
I've not covered many campaigns that named a campaign manager and then didn't run for re-election. But Governor Walker's been saying for a while, why wouldn't I run for a third term? Why wouldn't I? Things are so good, why wouldn't I?
Right.
There are a couple things at play. One, the governor wants to trickle these things out, kind of keep the energy going. So tomorrow I'm sure he's going to give a pitch to the delegates about, thank you for all you've done for me, I may need your help again, that kind of thing, so watch for that. Two, for Walker, there's a long-term calculation. Start doing math. Governor Walker's is not a very old man. I think he's mid-40s. I don't want to guess the wrong number. He has said many times he could wait years to run for president again and still be younger than Trump and Clinton were last fall.
Yes.
But for Walker, the numbers that are important are these. 2018, if he wins, keeps him off, so January of 2023. President Trump, election 2020. That office should be open, barring something crazy, either Trump loses in 2020 and there's a Democrat there, but the GOP nomination should be open in 2024.
Okay.
Governor Walker has to stay relevant between now and then somehow. If he can stay governor until January of 2023, guess what is 1 year and 1 week after he would leave office in 2023? Iowa caucus.
Yeah.
In 2024. It is a bridge toward possible. Now, that's a lot of ifs between now and then. But it helps him stay relevant.
I brought up Jim Comey. So I'm interested in the response of our Wisconsin Republicans in Washington to the Comey firing. Mm-hmm. Now, yesterday, Speaker Ryan had some appearances, said Comey had become compromised and lost confidence. Senator Johnson had one sentence.
Yeah.
Thank you for your service and good luck in the future. But Congressman Gallagher, the first termer from the 8th, you've reported his tweets. He was very concerned. It's imperative that the three investigations, U.S. Senate, U.S. House, and FBI, continue unimpeded and unaltered. Did you hear any other reaction of note from our Republican members of Congress? Because I didn't.
Not off the top of my head. Gallagher got some attention for his because he was a freshman. Now, his background is in foreign relations. He did work for the Senate Foreign Relations Committee out in D.C.
Yes.
He came back to Wisconsin to work on Walker's presidential campaign as an advisor on foreign policy. This is kind of in his wheelhouse of somebody who's a former Marine who's been in D.C., but he's taken a fairly high-profile role in being a voice for Republicans now. He's faced criticism from Democrats because he has not really been doing a lot of interviews.
Yeah.
Likes to communicate via Twitter or, things like that. But he's kind of raised some concerns.
And no potential Republican U.S. Senate candidates are speaking tomorrow because there's too many?
They're not announced. That's part of it,
That's not part of the schedule you and I have been given.
Yes, but they're not announced candidates. That's
what
I mean.
That's
so if you're not announced candidate, what do you do?
Okay.
Same thing for Democrats at next month's convention. If you haven't announced for governor, what do you do with those folks? Because you could argue almost anybody could say, I might run for Senate. Give me 5 minutes.
Yeah, that's a very good point. No stock picks because of the convention tomorrow?
Be back next week.
Okay. And we just ought to note that you're about to get a personal delivery device near you. That's been passed. That's on the governor's desk. He's going to sign that. And also on the governor's desk is a bill that would abolish work permits for those under 18.
16 and 17.
16 and 17. Thank you. Thank you. So those are on the governor's desk. I'm Steve Walders.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
That's Rewind for May 12.
Rewind, your week in review is sponsored by the Transportation Development Association of Wisconsin. Sharing one goal, enhancing the quality of life in Wisconsin through the development and maintenance of a strong transportation network. The Transportation Development Association of Wisconsin. It's how we get there.